This podcast is brought to you in part by The Pop Insider. The Pop Insider has all the latest in news, merch reviews, and other geeky goodness. Whether you're a wizard, a Sith Lord, or a superhero, fuel your fandom at thepopinsider.com.
Do not adjust your settings. Take your hands off the keys. Your search is over. These are the geeks you're looking for. You found Geek Watch 1.
Hey, Geeksters, I'm Kyla.
And I'm Ken.
And you found Geek Watch 1.
Welcome back, Geeksters, to Geek Watch 1. And we're getting closer and closer to summer and the end of this craziness that's been going on for the last year. This last year almost hasn't existed because no one's been able to go outside to see that it actually was there.
It was, I was looking at my Facebook memories, and today, a year ago, I posted about getting up super early to go to the grocery store, because this was when everyone got sent home from work. It would have been the Saturday last year, mm-hmm. when everyone had to get out and was invading grocery stores and buying up all the toilet paper, mm-hmm. and all the sanitizers and all the everything and all the meat and all of the food. Mm-hmm. And I was up super early to get to the grocery store when they opened, mm-hmm. so I didn't have to deal with craziness and I could stock up on stuff.
And I think the night before I had maybe barely gotten home and I gotten a text that that we weren't going to be returning to the office, mm-hmm. for the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
And I was just like, you mean I get to work from home? And I was like, that freaked me out. It freaked me out because
you've never done it.
I'd never done it before. And now I'm like,
you don't want to go back.
I don't want to go back.
I still see that there's going to be a lot of offices that are going to reduce overhead by keeping people working from home.
Yeah.
Well,
you don't have to have a building. You don't have to have an office.
Like the company that I work for owns the building that I work in, but they're doing something. All I know is that there was like a major restructuring, and 2 weeks ago, actually started maybe a month ago by this point. But 2 weeks ago, my group, the group I was in, were allowed to come into the office and clear out our desks, and so. Yeah, I walk in the building and my office looks like a ghost town.
Did you see Tumbleweed? So,
yeah, honestly, yeah. I did look out though, because there were three other people that were with my team that were there cleaning out. And so we kind of talked for a little bit. It was kind of bittersweet, but I did manage to get all my swag out. And My Chuck Norris poster, my Chuck Norris calendar that you gave me last year was just still sitting there. He was guarding my desk on March.
So now you get to flip through the rest of the year and see what Chuck Norris was up to.
Yeah, I got to see what he was doing for the rest of the year. But it, honestly, I would be surprised if we're back in the office.
Yeah.
I would be surprised. I know that some teams are.
Like, the thing that gets me is a lot of times it's managers who love having people together.
Yeah.
Like, they believe having people in proximity to each other physically is better for teamwork and all that. As far as I'm concerned, if I can get all my stuff done via email and these damn Zoom calls, that's all I need. I don't have to be there to, like, share a cupcake.
Well,
like,
right. My big question, where in the world – I think Zoom caused all this, because no one in the world anywhere had ever heard of Zoom before this started. Mm-hmm. Yep. It was like this started, and all of a sudden Zoom hit and said, hey, look at this.
And the thing is, Zoom was there on a corporate level.
Right.
And that's where it sat, and everyone kind of knew Skype. And a couple other smaller things. Mm-hmm. Skype did not jump on it, and that was the problem.
Right.
Zoom knew how to jump on it.
It did.
And get out there to everyone, mm-hmm. show how easy it was to use.
Right.
And how you could have the multi-screen thing and all the stuff, mm-hmm. going on. And some features that Skype just doesn't have.
Right. Yeah. Well, more than likely, also, on a corporate level, Zoom is probably cheaper. Skype for us at our level, yeah, where we got what, two people back and forth, maybe two or three people talking for like an hour, maybe an hour and a half, is free. But you get onto a corporate level, they got to pay for Skype.
Right.
Yeah. And the other thing is Zoom was already in there with a lot of companies.
Right.
It was a bit cheaper already. Mm-hmm. And so those companies were using it and saying, okay, we have all these people working at home now. Let's get them to download it. And so we don't have to switch.
Right. I mean, like I had some experience with virtual meetings because I would have seminars I would have to do.
Yeah.
When I was going through my training, and like every month, 4 to 6 weeks, I would meet with my team, mm-hmm, and we were all from different parts of the country.
Right.
So I would do that, but it was something that was used on a limited basis. Mm-hmm. But then once this happened, and I guess once the company saw, oh, well, you know what? These certain teams can still do what they need to do from their desks. Oh, and we got this program that we can use, so we can still have meetings. Actually, we can add more meetings.
That's what got me started. They added more meetings. Yes. Everyone working from home will understand this. In the first month or two of working from home, you probably attended more meetings than you ever did in person.
Yeah.
Because they decided they had to check in on people, mm-hmm, and like, okay, this small team, we're going to have a meeting every Monday morning. Mm-hmm. This bigger team, every Wednesday afternoon. Oh, let's add another one on Thursday. You're not doing anything.
Right.
And it's like,
I mean, and there are some days, and honestly, like I love technology, don't get me wrong, but there are some days where, because our book club moved to virtual meetings.
That's right. Rubber City Book Posse's been virtual for like a year now.
And so there, and I love my book club, don't get me wrong, but there are days where if I've had two or three meetings through the day, and then we have that meeting, we meet on the first Tuesday and the third Saturday in the month. So if I've been in meetings all day and I've been on camera all day on Tuesday,
you're just done.
I'm done.
You don't want to reapply your makeup. You're just done.
I'm just. But you know, I stick with it because at least it's something that I want to do is talk to my people. But still, you know, I kind of got to where I'm like, oh,
that's the only way you can at this point.
Right. Yeah.
Now you actually see people in person from a distance,
and thankfully the bookstore where we were meeting is still open and operating, and hopefully,
and so is the local coffee shop where we meet on the Saturday meetings. I don't think they have tables available still because it's a small space indoors. So
yeah.
But it's Nervous Dog. Anyone in the Akron area, if you want good coffee and good sandwiches and salads, go to Nervous Dog.
Which one? The one up in Stowe?
We meet at the one in Stowe. Yeah.
Okay.
But I mean, all the locations in the area are pretty good.
Yeah.
For that,
but I can see where not being able to do it at the, because those places are tiny.
Yeah, they are. So I mean, they do have some outdoor seating. The one in, mm-hmm, Stowe has kind of a back patio thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we just stopped right away because we're like, we don't want people to feel obligated to come to the meeting, mm-hmm, that kind of thing. So, but yeah, it's been for everybody. It's been an interesting year, whether you get to stay home and work and deal with all these damn Zoom calls or you have to go to a workplace and deal with a lot more masking and distancing and stuff. And it's been an interesting year for everyone. At least now with increased vaccinations, it'll be better.
Yeah.
You know, from what they've told us you can do after being vaccinated, you know.
Well, once we get everybody vaccinated, we could go to almost back to normal.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, people are talking about back to normal. I don't think it'll be the way it was. So yeah. I don't know what people are defining normal as, but.
Well, what it will be is we will be allowed to go back to what we had as the normal, but people won't accept that. And they'll actually still add some restrictions in on their own. It won't be the government or anybody else telling you you have restrictions. It'll be just people on their own adding their own restrictions.
Yeah, quite honestly, I don't see the reason to not continue to wear masks. That.
Well, I will say I'm a fan of masks now because in the past year, I have not had, because I normally would have like a mild cold. Like I generally don't get sick per se, but I'll get some kind of mouth cold. I have not got a mouth cold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no cold.
Nothing. Like, no allergies.
Very few sniffles, allergy stuff. I mean, yeah. It's been great.
And plus, you know what? I got some pretty good-looking masks now. I really do.
I make sure you have them. You never buy them yourself.
Dawn has helped make my mask game strong.
Basically, the masks have taken the place of buying geeky t-shirts.
Yes.
Not that we don't still buy some geeky t-shirts and stuff, but the masks have taken the place of that. Every time I see a cool one that I like, or mm-hmm. we don't all have all geeky ones. They're not all geeky, but yeah. About half of them.
Well, that
three quarters are geeky.
That's kind of funny because
I coordinate now. I mean, it's not really geeky, but the skull one that I got for Halloween, I pair it with my Call of Duty hoodie. Because it has this big skull on it, and I'm just—I feel like it coordinates. You know?
I don't like to coordinate.
I got to coordinate. You know? So
well, that kind of reminds me because I should have listened to Vicky this past year because anytime we stopped at the flea market for produce or something, they had all these camouflage masks. And you guys know me; I don't wear camouflage generally. That's just not my style. But when I wrestle, I was wrestling as a G.I. Joe type character. But I wasn't wrestling when we were looking at the flea market. I've actually started wrestling again. And now it's like I had a show last night that I had to use a regular bandana because I didn't have a camouflage mask.
See? Mm-hmm.
So now it's like if I had listened to Vicky, I would have had it.
You need them for all occasions. Like, okay, Kylan doesn't get one for every holiday, but I kind of do. Like, I have Christmassy ones. I have Valentine, although I did get Kylan a Valentine one. It has kisses all over it. a Valentine one. I have an Easter one ready to go. I've already got the Memorial Day / 4th of July ones ready because they were on clearance and they're blue with like red and white stars all over them.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So yeah, I've got seasonal stuff. I've got holiday stuff. I've got geeky stuff. And I don't like, the thing is I get masks that are decently made, but not overpriced. Right. Like, if they're made by someone, then yeah, I'll pay like $10 or $15 for the mask. But if they come from a company, I'm like, you people do not need $10 for that mask.
Right, right.
So I won't pay $10 for it.
And we did, there's a friend of the show who he jumped into the mask game himself. Robert of RAK Films.
Yeah.
And it's called RAK. It's not RAK. It's RAK.
No, actually, he would correct you because it is RAK. It's actually his initials.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's why there's periods between them.
Yeah. Well, see, that's what I thought
if you call your company that, then it's called RAK.
Well, and we know if you've seen some of the movies, so.
There's a reason.
Yes.
There's
a reason. But
he has masks.
He has masks. So, and they're really nice and adjustable.
He sent Kylan a couple. So
I gotta get a hold of him. He never gave me any of those.
He asked. Kylan asked.
Yeah, just message him. So I messaged him, and I have to admit, like, I've kind of gotten a little bit particular about my masks now because I kind of like
certain style, certain fit.
Yeah. So
who'd have thought?
Who'd have thought? You know, I was like, I mean, a year ago, it's like, you know, we just had those surgical looking ones, and I thought, oh, I'm good, and then. Now
it's a fashion statement.
Yeah, exactly. It is a fashion statement.
It's nice out. I think I'm gonna wear my tiger mask.
I think about which store I'm going to as to which mask I wear.
When I go, like Wednesdays when I go to the comic shop, you know. Yeah, and I want John to respect me because my taste in comics is not the best. I know that. I know that.
But John doesn't judge you.
John doesn't judge me because he knows where I live. He's like, hey, Kylan, I got this lot of 70s Kung Fu comics. That's a shut up and take my money situation, John. You know, so I can at least wear something that's comic appropriate for
that's
him.
That's true.
So,
yeah, that's our mask story.
That's our mask story.
Everyone loves masks.
And now that we've made it to the end of Geek Watch 1.
Is it that's your
let's
mask
beyond the pandemic what else it? Did we do this week
you know what I am still I will say I will finish I will finally finish after four or five times I will finish the Bourne Identity I'm proud of that
cool
let us know when you finish
so that's and I mean that's pretty much it although I did finish Call of Duty I finished the campaign part. But I'm going to go back and play it again because that's a messed up ending. It is a mess. It is a mess.
I saw the very end when he was playing, and I'm like, was that it?
It is a messed up ending. And so, yeah, I think I'm going to go back and play it again. You know, maybe I won't be the good guy this time.
See if you get a better ending out of it.
There you go.
Dude.
Kylan hasn't watched it yet, and I don't know if you guys have, but I watched Assembled.
We watched it this morning.
Yeah, the WandaVision episode. That was good. I love behind-the-scenes stuff anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's Vicky and I's jam. That's the whole reason we buy physical DVD or Blu-ray still.
Yeah. I mean, I love all the little bits and stuff that you learn. Like, honestly, even with, like, the stuff from the 50s, seeing the colors of the sets and the fact that, you know, even though it was all going to be in black and white, they still coordinated everything. And even the audience came in dressed like they were in the 50s.
Oh, yeah. Well, stuff like that and how the writers and producer or writers and directors sat down with Dick Van Dyke before the show even started to find out how did they actually film back in the 50s for the sitcoms. Mm-hmm. And he actually told them how they did the show.
Yeah, because it wasn't just finding out about the acting.
Mm-hmm.
It was finding out about the actual production
of the
show. It was because like they had said something about Dick Van Dyke being consulted about some of this stuff early on. But they didn't really go into it. So they went into it. It was kind of nice. You could tell the actors and producers and that were really happy to be able to talk about everything finally.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like, so with the 50s ones, did they reproduce the techniques as close as they could?
Yeah.
And actually, the camera tricks, the lighting was done with 50s style lighting for the actual studio lights.
Guy that did some of the effects, like when Wanda's in the kitchen making stuff and things are floating around, those are on wires. The guy that did the effects actually studied under some of the early effects guys and learned how to do all that. He already knew how to do it. No one had ever asked him in his career because he was a young guy.
Right.
He got the chance to use it.
Nice. You know? Okay.
So it showed you with all these things on the wires sliding along and hanging there and all that.
Okay.
And then it talked about Vision having to be blue. Because showing up on black and white, you didn't see him properly if he was his normal magenta color.
Right.
And they did happen to mention that actresses back then would actually wear blue lipstick, so it showed up making people think it was red in black and white.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So
it was a lot of little things like that learning along the way and they talked about every aspect of the show. So there was the production, there was the acting, there was, you know, the Easter egg kind of stuff, and there was even the music. Like they talked to the music composers.
Mm-hmm. How they did the different theme songs for every episode.
Yeah, how they adapted the theme songs, how they always had the same progression of notes in every single song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the same motif.
Yeah, there was a YouTube video that showed all of those a couple weeks ago. But yeah, just the fact they did that. So it was a satisfying show to watch if you enjoyed the series to actually see how they did so much of it and who was involved in it.
Okay.
I really liked the part of it where they were talking about the actual visual effects and what stuff was CG, what wasn't. Because, like, a lot of Paul Bettany's face, they ended up figuring out they wanted to keep as much of it as they could. So the computer enhancement was to add on to what was already there. But most of the time, his nose and his lips were all, that was him.
Right.
And then they would add on the other stuff around him to fill it out.
Well, that they made him blue.
Yeah, for the back in their first couple.
That's what they've done with him in the movies and that too, though. Like all of that stuff, like he's never really had prosthetics,
right?
Because of the way Vision looks,
mm-hmm.
you know, he can wear the outfit, but his head has to look a certain way, and they were talking to the artists behind doing those effects, and they were like, well, does he have to look like Vision in this scene? And they were like, well, yeah, because he's at home and he's being himself.
Right.
So he has to look that way. He can't, you know, he's not looking human.
Right.
Yeah.
So they're just like, okay, here's more that we have to do.
Cool.
And so, the weird, interesting thing is they told everything on how it was done behind the scenes, but you still didn't get any spoilers on what might be happening and stuff.
Well, no, yeah, that's true. I mean, they explained a little bit of what happened in the show, but nothing. I mean, that wasn't the point of it, though. You weren't supposed to get any.
Well, no, I thought that's what was kind of cool, that they still, you have no idea, like, even when they're talking about, like, Evan Peters being brought in, they didn't mention at all why he was brought in or anything else. It's just that they brought him in to do it.
Right. And they have since mentioned nothing about whether he will still be involved in the MCU. There's been a lot. I have a couple of tidbits. Actually, I may as well talk about them now because I thought it was kind of cool that they confirmed that the head writer confirmed that the span of the entire series from when Wanda first opened the hex to when she closed it is about 7 days.
It kind of feels like that.
That's it. It's just a week. So it's still prior to what's going on in Spider-Man Homecoming.
Mm-hmm. So far from home.
Far from home's the next.
That and another amazing part of this was the set decoration team. Their shooting schedule was so tight that when they would change the town or change the sets, you had 12 hours from when shooting ended till they started up again to change everything and get a brand new set.
Repaint things. Everything was overnight. They said usually you come in and you get at least a couple of days, but no, it all had to happen overnight.
Oh, geez.
So like the town square, you know how every episode the town square changed a little bit and the signs everywhere and everything changed? That was a 12-hour span to do that.
Yep.
Jeez.
I think the house set took a little bit more time than that, but not by much.
Right. And I mean, the thing is, when they're filming, it's not like the people who are making the sets are involved in anything film-wise necessarily, so they're behind the scenes building stuff anyway.
Right.
Yeah, they're getting ready for the next set.
Yeah, they're constructing it, and then they're just, boom, teardown. It's not like it has to be built like a permanent structure.
Right.
They have certain teardown things they do anyway.
Well, see, I was thinking about, like, the house.
Yeah.
Like, in the 50s, like, the house just a ranch-style house. Wasn't there, like, a step down? From the living room, or was it all the same?
If you look, that step down from the door down to the where the couch is at is in every episode.
Yeah, that's a step down, yeah.
But the layout of the house is the same.
The stairs were the next one.
And then the stairs moved each time after
No,
that.
The stairs didn't really move. The stairs changed.
The type of stairs was moved.
Position. Yeah.
Okay.
Like, they were in the same position for the Brady Bunch.
Right.
And they were in the same position for Malcolm and for Modern Family and all, they were in the same position.
Right.
Well, if you look at the cool thing is, if you watch this, they do have like a 30-second clip in there that basically takes it. You're looking at the living room and it just morphs through the entire series.
Yeah.
So you see that things didn't move, they just changed what they look like. Yeah, I mean, like the stairs is totally different stairs, but they're still in the same place for each one of them. The kitchen's in the exact same place for every one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What was nice was at the beginning they're showing the 50s, and mainly they focused on the 50s for being the set sitcom. All the sets for that show were all on the stage, and the entire episode was filmed in front of an audience. So his office was over to one side, his work. Then next, right beside that was the living room. Right into the kitchen, right beside that, the way an old sitcom was filmed.
Yeah. Right,
a lot of new ones still filmed.
Yeah.
They did the other shots as well, where like in the 50s one where Wanda suddenly changes her dress.
Mm-hmm.
It was a whole thing where she was standing there. She had the dress on and then they stopped filming. She had to go get changed and get the other one. And then they were back again. And when they did the 70s, when she was going through all the jackets, all the coats and stuff.
Yeah.
She said she had to stand there because it happened so fast. She just had to stand there and wait. Well, they pulled one coat off of her and put another one on her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and she had to hold the same position to make sure that it would match.
She had to hold the pose.
Oh, man.
Going through all those coats. But all of them basically said that, especially the early episodes, they really enjoyed them because it was like being a stage actor.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, that's because very few, the main characters especially, but very few of the others even, were sitcom actors.
Yeah.
What's her name from that 70s show? She loved it from the opposite direction because she knows sitcoms. She's always done sitcoms. Yep. When she got to do the serious stuff towards the end with the battle and stuff, and the she thought that was the greatest thing in the world because she's never done any of the action type stuff.
Yep.
Right.
And doing a full body scan. Sorry. They did a full body scan of her for digital stuff. And she's like, these were awesome things that she, as an actress, has never got a chance to do.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so it's a cool. I mean, it'll be cool like with every series for them to go through this, so you get even more insight into what's going on and stuff.
Oh man, I can't wait. I'm already I'm on the countdown to Friday. So bad.
We got 3 days or 2 days technically.
The other thing I watched over the weekend. It's been out for a little while and I hadn't watched it yet. It's a limited series on Netflix called High Score.
I think I've seen parts of it, or I've seen that it's on there.
Yeah, and it's only like 6 episodes, but it's basically the history of video games.
Yeah, we did watch that one.
Yeah, and it's really cool because it's not just some like dull documentary taking you through the ages. It tells you it interviews some of the people who actually created these games, whether it was Space Invaders or Pac-Man or like the first RPG with images involved, and it takes you to they talk to the people who do the music and the sounds. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And like about a third of the series is actually in Japan with subtitles because so much of it happened in Japan.
Yeah.
Right.
And it takes you through the tournaments, like grown up versions of the kids who won the Nintendo tournaments and stuff like that. But it's kind of cool because like, I'm not a gamer. I don't really do video games, but I like the development and the history behind it all. And like, it takes it through stages, like the arcade versions to the home versions to, you know, the first first person shooters and all that kind of stuff. So right. I think it's a cool show. If you're remotely geeky, even if you're not hugely into games like me, I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true.
When we watch it, I like the point of view that it comes from that each episode wasn't about a specific time frame or something like that. They took a certain part of video games and covered that. So like the first one was just the creation of where did video games come from? That's the one that focused more on like Space Invaders, wasn't it? Because that was one of the first huge ones to hit the scene that this was an actual video game. Because pinball's been around since the 60s. And that was an arcade game, yes, but it wasn't an actual video game.
Right.
So,
But it was about Space Invaders and had stuff about Atari. Mm-hmm. And a bit about Pong, but they had an entire
episode about the history of Nintendo and Mario, how Mario basically changed the world of video games in general.
Yeah.
Then they had an entire episode just about fighting games and one about role-playing games. And it was awesome because it was a different way to look at it. Actually, it reminded me a little bit of the way they did the Toys That Made Us and the Movies That Made Us series.
Yeah.
A similar take on it. It's not the same people who did it, but that style of documentary making.
Yeah, to kind of give you all the aspects of it, not just, you know, this was the year this happened and this was the year this happened, but talking to the people and showing the early developments. Like, I thought it was cool. The one who created Space Invaders pulled out his old book, his original book from when he drew the Space Invaders creatures.
Yeah.
And they were octopus and squid, etc. And he went ahead and turned them into aliens. And then the one who the woman who did the first who did the Mystery Mansion and created this whole flow chart on a massive piece of paper and then had no idea what to do with it. But thankfully, her husband was a programmer doing Apple stuff and was able to create the game, you know, stuff like that. It was just kind of cool to see all that.
You have liked, Kylan, when they got into the guys that started id Software and doing Doom and Wolfenstein.
Yeah. I was telling him about it.
I'm definitely, because I love,
you know, you have to watch it from the beginning. You can't just go and watch an episode. You have to watch it from the beginning.
Well, anybody who grew up in the 90s would realize why that, if I remember right, that same episode that covered like Doom covered Mortal Kombat some too.
Yeah.
Because outside of the video game realm itself, those were made a huge worldwide splash because those were the first games that people truly had a major visceral reaction to what was on the screen. The parents groups going bananas for it and stuff, and that's the reason we have a ratings board now for video games and stuff like that, is those two games specifically.
It was the first ones that gave you all the blood,
right?
Basically, all the blood and violence
The funny thing is, I went to a Southern Baptist college, and we had Mortal Kombat on campus. Nobody ever said anything negative about it. Like, you know, and people learned
because it was just some video game.
It was just
for
a game.
Geeks.
Yeah.
Like, no one
cared. You know, we figured out the fatalities and all that stuff. Next thing we know, boom, parents are going off because, you know, Timmy, you know, knows how to punch somebody's head off.
The arcade games is not what caused the problem. It was when it was transferred to the Sega. And, you know, all of a sudden, parents are walking by when their kids are sitting in the living room and watching this happen. Like, hey, wait a minute. Because you got to think, most of the parents that were going nuts are not going to the arcade. They don't realize that it's on the screen in the arcade.
Yeah, they don't know what their kids are playing.
So when they made the change to the home systems, that's when it started to cause problems.
Yeah, and it was because it wasn't necessarily because of what was on the screen. Mm-hmm. It was because parents couldn't tell based on the box what their kids were going to be seeing and playing.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't look, Martha!
That's, like I said, that's why they created like the ratings boards and stuff. So that they would say on the box, okay, this is rated this because of these things.
Exactly.
So apparently, you know, they never paid attention to how thick Chun-Li's thighs were before any of this happened.
They didn't care what she looked like?
Apparently not.
They specifically put her in because they wanted women to enjoy the game.
Yeah.
And it was based on martial arts movies from Asia that always had female martial artists in them.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to admit, I did love that.
Mm-hmm.
And also, basically, the other one with this, like, bringing those to home systems, but it didn't even have to do with computers, because if you go with the history of computer games, there's a lot of other stuff that would have caused ratings problems way before this. But no, it was the home consoles that were that people noticed. The Sega and Nintendo and Super Nintendo and those things. PC, it's like, you had stuff like what, the Leisure Suit Larry series starts in the 80s. Obviously parents didn't watch that very often.
Right.
No.
Right. And that's actually the other thing about the series. It's not just the history of video games. A lot of it is the history of technology, because some of these games started on the ticker type little programming things where you had to wait until something printed out to see where your character was moving.
Yeah.
Like that's what they were doing. And then evolved into, you know, the first versions of the internet and things like that. Like, it was kind of interesting just seeing the technology progression as well.
Right.
That they obviously were grabbing on to the technology as it grew and gaming grew, and gaming helped the technology because it to speed things up.
Well, that,
you know,
go ahead.
But I remember being, I don't know, 12, 13, 14 years old in the arcade. And I remember thinking that there was going to be a time when I would stop. Now, the thing was, at the same time I'm playing Pac-Man, there was some dude in a business suit that was on his lunch break playing Pole Position. And that was something that kind of spoke to me at that point, but I thought I couldn't imagine seeing video games progress. But then,
and that's just it. Arcades were arcades. You had to go out and play. That was the concept of being able to do it at home wasn't even part of it.
I mean, because the Atari, as fun as it was nowhere near the arcade experience.
And that's one of the things they talk about, why things improved over time.
Right.
And also, without that, I don't think they did it on purpose, but with the graphics and things getting better, the games, you got to think, originally the games were catching... especially when Nintendo first hit, a lot of adults played it, but it was Mario, and most of the games on the original Nintendo were aimed at a younger audience.
Yeah.
But as the graphics got better, that audience starts getting older, and the games start getting older. That's when you start, by the time you get in the early 90s, those kids that were 7 and 8 playing Mario are now teenagers playing Mortal Kombat. And from there, you move on to like PlayStation, and you got even older playing like Resident Evil and Tomb Raider and these other games that are definitely not kiddie games that the kids are not going to jump into as easy.
Right.
Right.
You want to keep your audience selling.
Yeah, it's one of the media forms that actually did grow with or age with the audience and age up their content with the audience.
Right.
Well, I mean, you had Madden. So like when Madden...
They talked about sports games, too.
Yeah, there's an entire episode about sports games.
And, you know, and that was the thing. Like, I remember the Madden games. Like, Madden was kind of crappy. Like, Tecmo Bowl was better than Madden. But then Madden kept getting better.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And now you get to the point now where you have not arrived in sports until you're on the cover of either the NBA.
One of the sports games.
Or one of those sports games, right?
Mm-hmm. It's like... That's the modern day Wheatie box.
Yeah, it is.
You know, although there's the curse that goes with that too. But that's
there's apparently
story.
A curse involved. Yeah.
Well,
so.
But anyway, the one of the other things that happened this week, we mentioned it last week. Friend of ours, Heather Kreider, she started her new Kickstarter on Saturday. Now, as of today, as of recording time on Sunday, she's already made half of her goal. Her goals is a for the product a modest $19,000, and she's already passed 9,800. So, and that's one day.
Wow.
So, I mean, her little demons are popular. All of the early bird stuff is gone. Thankfully I got my early bird in as soon as it hit noon on Saturday. I refreshed the page. I'm like, I just gotta get it. I gotta make sure I get it. So, I got my early bird thing. So you're out of luck for early birds, but there's still plenty of stuff, plenty of add-ons you can do. And it's got 29 days to go. So almost a whole month. And I'd be surprised if it didn't make its goal considering it's already halfway there. So that is the My Little Demon Lil Squiddy Plush.
Yes. We haven't signed up for it yet, but we're going to be probably – I had forgotten about it until you just mentioned it because I knew it was coming.
I'm hoping it makes the stretch goals because from the start, there are three available, and I went for the pledge that gets you three. Mm-hmm. And it's actually a couple of the stretch ones I like better than – couple of the original three, so I'm really hoping it gets to the stretch so I can choose from those as well.
Right.
But yeah, so Lil Squiddy Plush, or look up either look up My Little Demon or look up Heather Kreider on Kickstarter, or go to our page on Facebook because I did share the link there on Saturday, so it'll be there kind of near the top of the page.
Okay.
Awesome.
That is sweet. Oh. So is that, wow, we've gone almost 40 minutes, and it's just what we're doing this week. We've had a busy week.
I'm just going to get through the news, and we'll be done.
Right. Yeah. So what has been happening outside of the realm of, well, I had one other quick thing, because you said you're going to put it up on the Facebook page anyway.
Yep.
I actually had a wrestling match last night.
Woo!
Now, the one you're putting up is actually from last month, and it's cool because it's a show that we're doing down outside of Canton, or south of Massillon, Ohio, which is Canton, Massillon, or south of us. But it's very much just friends and family are the only people at this show. And they tried to spread it out. This last night's show, we did a whole lot better on controlling what the crowd was doing than we did the week before. Dawn's going to put up the video on the Facebook page if anybody's interested or is going to link to it. I'm the first match on there, and it's the first match I've had in 4 to 5 years. So a lot of being goofy, and what you hear here is the same as my wrestling character, Blackhawk. So anybody who's interested in that, that's going to be up and available. And then we'll let you guys know. If you guys want to see more of it, I'll put more of it up when it's available.
Yep.
So, because I know there's plenty of geeks out there that like wrestling, too. So that's independent true, right? Wrestling is a totally different animal than what you're going to see on mainstream TV.
That is very true.
So that was fun, though.
Awesome. That's important. As long as you're having fun doing
that's
it,
right.
I mean, why else would you want to do it?
Right. Independent wrestling, usually you're not making enough money to actually do it for the money. If you're not having fun, don't do it. When I'm training kids and I'm telling people about it, kids that are just getting in, it's like, dude, if you stop having fun, move on.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Unless you're actually making enough money to make a living at it, then it's not worth being angry and upset about it.
Well, I mean, it's pretty much just like any other sports, unless you're big name with a big company, you're not going to be making a lot of money.
Exactly.
Right.
You're lucky if you get enough money to get to the show and go home with the
there
gas.
There you go.
So
maybe you can get a cheap dinner out of it. You never know.
Hey, I got Taco Bell last night.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
That's that wrestling food. There you
that's
go.
That's right.
Big funds.
But anybody who wants to check out the company, it's Power Slam Pro Wrestling in Beach City, Ohio.
Well, on Friday, Cassie was training
yeah.
in it.
Oh, yeah. And if you look at you put that up on your Facebook, right?
Cassie's, like always.
Oh, Cassie's Instagram and link to the, I think, Vicky or Cassie's Facebook page. There's a video of Cassie playing in the ring with me.
Oh, there you go.
So she came down when we did the training on Friday night. So, and she's going to probably come down more often. So I'm thinking the more she's in the ring, the more she's going to have fun and actually do stuff.
Nice.
I'm going to train her, and she's going to be a pro wrestler, too.
She'll just be your manager.
That's right. Well, Vicky wants to manage me and then bring Cassie out with her.
Ah, okay.
So it'd be fun stuff. But other than that, what's going on with everybody else in the world, Dawn?
Okay, well, it was kind of a slow news week, but there are some interesting stories. I had to share the fact that, of course, I'm still reading up on, as always, Marvel stuff, MCU, and WandaVision. There's still a lot of WandaVision news out there because various blogs are talking to the writers, the directors, the producers, to find out a little bit more when they can about further progressions of storylines or if actors are going to show up. And the one thing I'm glad I found, because this is what bothered me, but at the end of the show, we always know that Marvel does a really good job of dropping in hints and Easter eggy things that don't pay off for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like this will be one of them. Well, I honestly thought it was going to pay off by the end, and it has to do with FBI agent Jimmy Woo and his witness turned missing person.
Mm-hmm.
WandaVision director Matt Shakman confirmed that the secret identity of that missing person will be revealed somewhere down the road in the MCU.
Okay.
Which means it has to be someone of at least a little importance.
Right.
Or that could be the start of the Jimmy Woo series, because they've been talking about doing an actual Jimmy Woo TV series on or limited series.
They've been talking because viewers were talking about it, not because it was actually in any kind of development.
Okay.
I think honestly what he's talking about is something that we'll see in either one of the already in development shows or a movie at some point. It's likely something to do with Doctor Strange. You never know if Wanda's involved there.
Right.
Or Jimmy is often involved with Ant-Man. So it could be in there, but we'll see. Let you know when it comes out. A couple of adaptations that were announced this week, literary adaptations. FX has ordered a pilot for Kindred, based on the iconic book by Octavia Butler. Playwright and Watchmen consulting producer Brandon Jacobs Jenkins is writing the script. It's their take on Kindred will actually center on Dana, a young Black woman and aspiring writer who's left her family obligations and moved to Los Angeles. But before she can get settled, she finds herself being violently pulled back and forth in time to a 19th century plantation with which she and her family are linked.
Okay.
So she struggles to confront the secrets she never knew ran through her blood.
Okay.
That's totally different than what I thought it was going to be when you first mentioned Kindred.
Well, for those unfamiliar with Octavia Butler, she is an extremely well-known science fiction fantasy writer. She's African-American, and she has a lot of iconic books.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
She passed away a few years back. But yeah, so that's one of her most famous books is Kindred, one of the first.
Yeah, when you first said that, I thought it was something possibly going to be in the Vampire the Masquerade mythos, because back in the mid-90s, there was actually a TV series on Fox called Kindred the Embrace, and it was about the vampires.
Yep, we watched it.
It was very much Beverly Hills 90210 with vampires.
We actually own the VHS copy of the entire series.
Yeah. we can't watch it now.
Was it C. Thomas Howell was in that?
There was all kinds of people in it. Yeah, I loved the concepts of it. The concepts of different types of vampires had different powers. And different clans of vampires and that type of thing.
The novels that inspired it are a hell of a lot better than the TV show.
Yeah.
So go read the novels.
But if you can find the novels.
Vampire the Masquerade, which is actually an RPG.
Yeah.
But the novels that came out of it were much better. Yeah. And
the
so
games,
you should go find the novels and read those.
Yeah, the games are still very popular games. And the funny thing is that they made two card games out of it because they had to rename the card game.
Ah.
A little bit of a thing on that. The original Vampire the Masquerade card game was actually called Jihad.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
Then they changed it. Eventually, after a year or two, they changed it to Vampire the Eternal Struggle. I don't know why.
It's probably still noted in the original rules for the game, and because I do remember that from the novels, that basically clans set things up against each other, and technically that's called a jihad.
When you
put out essentially mark people for death, that is what it's called, and that's what the clans called it. So before we got into a lot of the Middle Eastern issues, that was fine to use.
Right.
Anyway, moving on. We are also getting a Netflix series based on The Talisman. And I have to tell you, this is one of my favorite Stephen King books. Steven Spielberg will be adapting The Talisman. It's a dark fantasy novel by Stephen King and Peter Straub. It's not solid horror the way most Stephen King things are, and I think it's because it's co-written. And the Duffer brothers, creators of Stranger Things, have been tapped to executive produce. Curtis Gwynn, a writer and executive producer on Stranger Things, will serve as showrunner.
Cool.
So you're getting Spielberg and Stranger Things in a Stephen King sci-fi fantasy.
Right.
And Stephen King is on board as an executive producer, not surprisingly. Mm-hmm. Now, the Talisman was... Huh?
No, go ahead.
No. The Talisman was published in 1984.
Mm-hmm.
And it tells the story of a boy who travels in and out of an alternate dimension to save his mother.
Okay.
And he has to face these, like, kind of like doppelgangers, parallel individuals on both sides of this universal split going on, and living in a world populated by werewolves and gunslingers. Big surprise, there's a gunslinger in a Stephen King novel.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? All of his books are part of one world. So
well,
that's what
right.
You-
Looking at all the people you've mentioned that are involved in this, the Duffer Brothers, Stephen King, Spielberg,
yep.
You know this is going to be a period. It's going to be happening in the 80s when the book was written. Because it's like that's what these guys do. That's their bread and butter.
I mean, it might be happening in the 80s. It's been a long time since I've read this, and I don't recall how significant the actual era is to the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like in Stranger Things, it's pretty significant to be in a certain time.
Yeah. Right.
And I don't know that it'll matter much either way. But interestingly on this, Spielberg actually acquired the screen rights to the novel in 1982 before it was even published.
Wow.
So he already knew he wanted it.
Mm.
And he spent 35 years trying to develop it as a film.
Well.
And a little over a decade ago, he tried to turn it into a TNT miniseries. So there's been a lot along the way that he's tried to do.
You know, and this is a Stephen King book because I read Eyes of the Dragon because I don't really do horror.
Right.
But I enjoyed Eyes of the Dragon.
That's fantasy.
Yeah. Now, had I known, because I thought for some reason I just assumed that this one was more of his horror novels. This sounds like this would have been right.
I mean, it's got creepiness in it,
right.
But it's definitely more fantasy with the alternate realms and stuff. It's Stephen King. You're going to get blood and killing and gross things at some point.
Well, that's like Stephen King. The only one. Well, the only Stephen King I've read was what was it? Dreamcatcher. But it's the same thing where it's a sci-fi novel with horror elements.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, and that's basically what The Talisman is. There was also a follow-up. I can't remember the name of it right now, but there was a follow-up. Not quite as good. The Talisman was really good.
Okay.
Anyone who's read a lot of Stephen King novels knows there are real hit or misses with Stephen King novels.
Right, yeah.
And so I would recommend this one, even if you're not a Stephen King fan, if you've never read any of his stuff before, I would recommend The Talisman as a good read.
Now, it seems like the stuff I read of Stephen King, and from I've not read a bad one, but mind you, I've only read 3 Stephen King books. Because I read The Stand.
Yeah, you got a long way to go.
But I read The Stand, loved it,
mm-hmm.
and Eyes of the Dragon and Running Man.
Right.
And all 3 of those are good. I just couldn't imagine, because it seems like the ones that are bad, people just wholeheartedly.
They're really bad.
They're really
bad.
He does either really good or really bad. They're
pretty
so
much,
in between.
Pretty much.
Well, when looking at The Talisman, is it one of the Stephen King novels where he really, really liked to hear the sound of his own keys?
No,
some of those Stephen King books get to like 1,000-1,500 pages. You're like, wait a minute, you don't need 1,500 pages to tell a story.
There are some that's one of the problems that he had when he was recovering from drug and alcohol issues. He got very wordy. but if you look at his early books, like Cujo and Carrie and things like that, and Christine, they're short.
Okay.
Like compared to some of the stuff you see, those are short. Then you get into like the 90s Stephen King, and they're like Needful Things, and which I really enjoyed, but damn, is it long. And
right.
so it really does depend what era. Some of them, even though they're long, are still good.
Right.
But other ones, definitely, it honestly made me stop reading it because he got so wordy.
Right.
And then I went back and basically picked up his, like, short story collections that he's had in the past, you know, 5-10 years. One or two of those, because if it has to be short, he'll get to the point.
Right.
You know? So that's kind of, we'll hear plenty about that, but that was an announcement that is finally getting done. So we'll hear more about that. And casting news we got this week, which is kind of near and dear to my heart, is for the live-action Powerpuff Girls.
Okay.
We got the three main roles. We have not found out any other characters that are going to be in it at this point, but we did get the three main roles. CW announced the three actresses. We're going to get Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s Chloe Bennett as Blossom. Also from Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., Dove Cameron as Bubbles, and Broadway actress Yana Peralt as Buttercup.
And Dove was on, Dove worked with Daisy too. She was on S.H.I.E.L.D.
That's what I said.
She's from the, what character was she?
She was the daughter of the general in the last couple seasons.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That was also training.
Okay.
Yeah, and she was in it, and another place some people might recognize her from is The Descendants on Disney.
Okay.
She was Maleficent's daughter.
Okay.
So she was on that too. And we've mentioned this before about what this series is going to be, but it's basically following the girls two decades after they were childhood heroes, and they really don't have fond memories of fighting crime and not having a childhood.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they're even talking to Professor X at this point, but the professor at this point, but they have to decide whether to reunite to save the world. So obviously they may not even be talking to each other. I don't know.
So you know what the plot is? Mojo Jojo shows up.
Oh my
Possibly.
God.
I want to see how the CW live action show is going to do Mojo Jojo.
Yeah, they love doing their damn CGI apes. Remember, was it on Flash they did that horrible one?
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
Gorilla Grodd, yeah.
Yeah, Gorilla Grodd. They're just going to make a new version of Gorilla Grodd.
We don't need him.
With a turban. It's Gorilla Grodd with a turban.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, at that point...
But the thing is...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, at that point, maybe we would have, like, his kid or something.
Yeah, because really, 20 years later, and if he was already a fully developed monkey, he might be dead. Because they, 30 to 40 years.
Right.
the thing is, Powerpuff Girls had a lot of villains, a lot of really good villains, a lot of recurring villains. It wasn't just about Mojo Jojo. So
the Rowdy Rough Boys.
Are going to show up. The male version of the Powerpuff Girls, in case you forgot who they were. That would be interesting when they cast those.
The original's on HBO now, isn't it?
I believe so. I believe it
is. I'll have to check it out. Because I've seen some episodes, but not a whole lot of it.
That we have, for writing this script, we have Heather Regnier, who has done Veronica Mars, and Diablo Cody, who wrote Juno. Mm-hmm. They're actually writing the script for the pilot. And one of the executive producers, not surprisingly, since it's the CW, is Greg Berlanti. So,
yeah.
And I'm sure he's a big fan. So my last story is something that, we can delve into deeply or not if we want, but the 41st Razzie noms came out this week.
Okay.
And I thought it was worth mentioning because, we've seen some of the bad movies, and so we should talk about it a little bit.
This year has been a lot of that because that's the only things that people actually let out of the gate.
Exactly. It was not great movies. You might be surprised by some of them, and you may have forgotten about some of them. But I basically went with just a few notable mentions. But in case you're not familiar, Razzies is about bad movies. This is nominations for the worst of the movies that have come out. It actually has 1,090 members from all 50 states and over 24 countries.
Wow.
So this is pretty widespread. It's not just an American thing. They cast their ballots online and they select the contenders in 9 categories from worst picture to worst screenplay, worst combo, worst director. This year's quote-unquote winners will be announced on Saturday, August 24th, which is the day before the Oscars, and that's when they do it. They do that annually. It's always the day before the Oscars that they announce the winners of the worst.
Okay. Now, so, how often have they had actually people that got Razzies actually got an Oscar?
I don't know that that's happened very often. You mean for the same movie? I don't know that that's happened often. Cause really, when I read you the ones I picked out here, you'll know that none of them are getting nominated for Oscars.
Okay.
Now what the most surprising one probably is the fact that Wonder Woman 84, got nominated for worst supporting actress for Kristen Wiig and also for worst sequel. And I don't know that it was the worst, but there's better ones in the category anyway.
Yeah.
The category for sequel is actually remakes, ripoffs, and sequels. That's the category, okay? So this fell in there because it was a sequel, and I think they just wanted the big name of it because it wasn't, I don't think, bad enough to get a Razzie. Not surprisingly, Fantasy Island has been nominated for Worst Picture, Worst Supporting Actress for two of them. There are two actresses listed, and Worst Screenplay and Worst Remake.
I had forgotten that was this year.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Another one that's not surprising at all is Hubie Halloween. Got nominated for Worst Actor, which is pretty much Adam Sandler in every movie. Worst Screen Combo, which was Sandler and his grating simpleton voice. And Worst Remake slash Ripoff, because we all know that Ernest Scared Stupid is better.
And see, Hubie Halloween wasn't a fantastic movie, but it was fun for what it was.
No, it was stupid. Kylan watched it. I saw about the last 10 minutes and felt like my life was wasted. It was a horrible movie. It was stupid. It was anything with Adam Sandler starts out bad anyway. So
except which one was it? The football one.
Waterboy.
Necessary
Roughness. Longest Yard.
Longest Yard is not an Adam Sandler movie. It has Adam Sandler in it. There's a difference.
Yeah, that wasn't one that he made and produced.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, right. his comedies are always just stupid. Like, you just you lose brain cells.
Right. He produced Longest Yard, though.
Yeah, but he may produce. It wasn't his company. It wasn't his production company.
Yeah, he didn't do the writing and the director. Or he doesn't do the directing much.
He didn't do the writing directing.
It wasn't his movie.
That's
what I'm saying.
Right.
It could have had someone else in the lead. It wouldn't have mattered.
Right.
It wasn't his movie. He didn't do his stupid comedy stuff.
No, he didn't. No.
That was fun. Okay, and anyways, the last one I wanted to note was because I actually did watch this movie, Robert Downey Jr.'s Doolittle.
We saw it too.
I liked the original Dr. Doolittle. I wanted to like this one, but so it has been nominated. It got some of the most nominations. It has been nominated for Worst Picture, Worst Actor, Worst Director, Worst Screenplay, Worst Remake, and Worst Screen Combo for Robert Downey Jr. and his utterly unconvincing Welsh accent.
Dang.
Which I will agree with. I couldn't figure out what accent he was trying to use during the movie.
See, that's another one that I actually had fun with, just because I'm not looking for the greatest movie in the world. I'm just looking to have a good time.
Yeah, I mean,
and it was a fun story.
It was reasonably fun, but it was definitely not well written. And the only fun part was all of the CGI animals.
Made that movie awesome.
And I think, honestly, I think this movie could technically be up for an Oscar for those CGI animals.
Yeah.
So it could get an Oscar nomination out of it. It won't be for Robert Downey Jr. That was the last news story I had, because I had to talk about the Razzies, because we sit through a lot of stuff.
Robert Downey Jr. in this because it's different from what we've seen recently from him.
Yeah, but it's not good. That's the problem. Like, the role itself, he did not do a good job in the role. It's kind of like seeing him in Sherlock.
Mm-hmm.
He does really well in the role.
Right.
But he did not do good in the role. It was like he wanted something to do and get paid for it. Like, that's why he took the role.
Right.
You know, it wasn't like he cared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was just one of those things.
So, and actually, we're getting close to where we would be anyway. And I think the next conversation we were thinking about doing would take a little longer than we want to go.
Yes, it would. So we can save it.
We'll save that. And we got other stuff coming up, because there are actual movies and things coming out now, finally, slowly.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, this week, actually, the day after this drops, the Zack Snyder cut of Justice League comes out on HBO to see what differences they make.
Yep.
And then
thankfully, we'll be able to stop hearing about the damn thing, because almost every day there's a new bit from it. There's a new photo. There's a new poster. There's a new trailer. It's like, shut the hell up. Just release the damn thing and get it over with.
Mainly, I want to see Darkseid. Darkseid looks like he's going to be really cool.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have zero interest. I sat through the movie the first time. That's all I needed.
I don't remember. I tend to remember all of my movies. I don't remember anything about that one.
It was dark.
Yeah. It was a Zack Snyder movie.
It was dark and had a bunch of people running around.
Like, I don't. Like, it's that and, like, which one was it? Apocalypse. X-Men Apocalypse. I don't remember.
Yeah, that's not worth remembering at all. No. That's another one that's like, oh, yeah, bad choices.
No.
I mean, and it had Oscar Isaacs in it, for goodness sake. Right. That was a bad
I have space to go back and rewatch Six Underground. So,
there
you know.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's going to bring us to the end of here today. So, Geeksters, what did you think of all this stuff? Especially all the news stories. There was all kinds of craziness with casting and stuff coming out. Are you watching Justice League? Let us know what you think about that, and we can talk about that next week after you've seen it. What was your reaction? Is it better or is it worse than the original one when they dropped it? Let us know. And this is the first time you guys are going to let us know before you get our reactions at all.
That's right.
So, let us know. You can get a hold of us, www.geekwatch1.com. Anywhere, everywhere, all social media, we are GeekWatch1. If you put GeekWatch1 into a search bar and don't find us, let us know. Ms. Dawn will take care of the problem.
I will send someone after it.
That's right. You can also email us, geekwatch1@gmail.com. We're proud members of the Tangent Bound Network at tangentboundnetwork.com and Weebie Geeks PC, or the Weebie Geeks Podcast Collective at weebiegeekspc.com. Also, you can check out our buddy Charlie Murphy over at Stray Dog and the Akron Pickle and Cafe 388, and search any of those three items. You will find Stray Dog. He can, and remember, he can send sauces and pickles anywhere in the country and maybe in the world if you can talk to him. Then you got our friends over at the Pop Insider and the Toy Insider. Check them out at thepopinsider.com and thetoyinsider.com. Other than that, for Dawn and Kylan and Vicky and myself, just remember,
no matter where you go, there you are.